This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Dwayne Simpson, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by AgriPulse. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Dwayne Simpson, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, next. For 250 years, America has been shaped by the people who feed, fuel, and lead our nation. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Use code 250USA at checkout by visiting agripulse.com/subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Over 100 members of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives were in Washington last week for their annual fly-in. The group marked over 140 meetings on Capitol Hill. President and CEO Dwayne Simpson says members of the House of Representatives had a good week.
I think that the House was about as productive in the last week as it's been in a very long time. They passed a lot of really big legislation. The Senate's taking a little longer on some of those. They're not leaving here till they're going to be here for a week in August. And some of that is they've got some nominations to finish and some other things too. But, this is a normal thing to expect. Every August, there's a long August recess. They come back in September, and then in an election year, they're pretty much home through all of October. So the number of legislative days left is getting very short. And so it was really important to get a number of pieces of legislation moving. The House absolutely took a lot of really important votes and moved legislation across a number of issues, from the national defense, reauthorization through, keeping the government open, once the fiscal year ends, to aid for farmers, you name it, they addressed it this last week. They really did took a lot of really important votes.
Did you sense a different temperature from members of the upper chamber?
You know, I think the Senate is going to go a little slower on some of those. The reconciliation bill that allows the Senate to pass legislation related to funding programs without needing a 60-vote majority. That came out of the House. The Senate has to change it just because of technical reasons about what committees are named in the bill. But I sense that the Senate's going to hold that back a little bit to make sure that if they have to put the government funding in it, that they have that as a tool. So we may not see that come out here before the August recess. I think that's more of a late September bill. With the rest of those, I think you're going to start seeing some of those start to move. Some of them are not as the priorities. The SAVE Act was tucked into one of those, and the voter ID just doesn't have the votes to pass in the Senate to even break a filibuster. So some of those won't move probably at all. Some of them will move a little more rapidly. And I expect that the reconciliation bill that came across is going to be changed and have to come back to the House before it can be finalized.
Dwayne, two different times this year, some former agriculture leaders in Washington signed a letter and sent it to congressional leadership saying that there is a crisis in agriculture and work needs to be done. Dwayne, from your perspective of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, is there a crisis in the country?
I don't know if I use the word crisis, but I could tell you that the farmer balance sheet is absolutely stressed. And this isn't just a cyclical issue. This is a structural issue. Whether you're looking at international competition and Brazil's continued growth in being a more competitive country, market availability, global market availability, changes in diets, there are a number of things that have driven where we sell our products lower and hurt prices. We've seen a little bit of a rally here recently in pricing, which is good. On the input side, we've seen, the war in Iran certainly hasn't helped, but we've seen input prices going up. We've seen land prices going up. So there's a cost there. We've seen shortages of labor, which is another ad cost driver. So, having these bridge payments and the financial support, no, there's no farmer in America that goes out and farms every day and expecting to get a check from the government in order to keep their doors open. But that being said, you know, they're not all going to be able to keep their doors open without the, without that support right now. And we really just have to get into the next year. I think when the payments from the ARC and PLC payments, you know, the reference prices change, all of those things change at October 1st. I think you're going to start to see a little more healthy balance sheets for farmers. But right now it's a pretty tough place. The balance sheets of farmers is the number one issue in Washington for, you know, across the board, no matter if you're from a co-op perspective, farm credit, any of the commodity organizations or the members of Congress who represent rural America, that this is the top issue.
The corn growers' recent study showing that farmers in the U.S. are paying more for inputs for some of the same inputs that farmers are paying in Brazil. How is this a structural issue, and should it be addressed?
I mean, I don't know how you would go about addressing it. I think that there's just a huge difference in the way we farm in the U.S. versus how we farm in Brazil. And I'm not saying this to be critical at all, the study from the National Corn Growers Association, but I do think it's very difficult to compare apples to apples there. And they tried their best to make that comparison. But just the use of generics, in fact, a lot of generics that aren't even, you know, the fake generics that are the fake products that come in into Brazil, the double cropping, all the corn acres there are double cropped. Their yields are about 97 bushels an acre on average in Brazil. So comparing what it costs to raise a 97 bushel corn crop versus a 270 bushel corn crop, I mean, I don't know how you make that comparison side by side. And I haven't read their study, but I think it's just, it's a very difficult case to make. That being said, there's no question that American farmers buy the best products that they can possibly buy. You know, they're more likely to buy branded products. They're more likely to pay the premium, and they get what they pay for. The question is the value proposition always there? And farmers have to make that decision every year. They have to go out and vote with their dollars. And if the companies that are providing those products are not providing enough value in the marketplace for those inputs, then farmers are going to choose something else. And so, you know, I appreciate NCGA putting that data out there. I think it's something everybody needs to pay close attention to. You know, I would just caution anyone when they read that to understand the difficulty in comparing how we farm in Brazil versus how we farm in the United States, because they're very, very different cropping styles, especially when you talk about corn and soybeans and the cost of production for you know, a corn acre there when it's a bean acre that they're planting, you know, a second crop in every year.
So now let's talk farm policy. It is called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, simply HR1. There were a number of provisions that would normally have been in a farm bill that were approved in that language. Yet we still have a number of titles of the farm bill that aren't done. Coming up on 8 years old. Certainly challenged with a calendar to see a new bill. What are your thoughts on the House bill, and what are you hopeful for in the Senate language?
First of all, that, you know, Chairman Thompson did yeoman's work getting a bill out of the House and getting it over to the Senate. This is something that was hard to drive those issues out of the House, because, you know, there are only 75 members of the entire House of Representatives who represent mostly rural districts out of 435. And so to get a bill across the finish line with some bipartisan support, really important. That being said, in the Senate, you need 60 votes. And, you know, Chairman Bozeman has a completely different task ahead of him. What I would tell you is our conversations with Chairman Bozeman and with ranking member Klobuchar were very positive, and they both seem to be singing off of the same page. I think that they are very, very close to reaching some kind of compromise in the Senate that will address the concerns the Democratic Party has raised around error rates for states and the cost share there around the SNAP participation. And if they reach that compromise, I think you're going to see a very high number of Republicans and Democrats both vote for this bill and get it out of get something moving out of committee at least here before the August recess. And so high level of confidence. I think you're going to see a bill get to conference, and then at that point they can negotiate the final details. But feel really good that there's a chance that this farm bill is going to get done. You don't get this far and not get it finished. So I think we get something done before the end of the calendar year.
I'm encouraged by your thought there, but I also heard you say calendar year. So from your perspective, is this more apt to be a lame duck vote?
Look, I don't want to sell the members short. I mean, it's always possible that they can get this done. But as we started off this conversation, you know, the calendar is working against us. And so getting a bill out of committee does give them the opportunity to get some floor time in September in the Senate to get a bill out. But the odds of getting a bill through the full Senate and then conference and then get it done before the recess ahead of the elections, that's going to be a really heavy lift. I just don't think there's enough legislative days. That being said, I think that we're going to be far enough along that they'll be able to do the work necessary so that when they come back post-election, that they'll be able to get something to the president.
From the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives perspective, what are your policy positions on E15 and on renewable diesel and other opportunities of taking crops and turning that into liquid transportation fuel?
You know, we have members, obviously, that are, you know, we have livestock members, we have members that sell oil. And despite that, we are an organization that recognizes that farmers do better when we have more markets and biofuels, you know, expanding biofuels markets here at home is a way for us to help all of our farmers. And so we are supportive of that. We support the year-round E15. We supported the changes in the 45Z with the indirect land use and the GREET model there. In fact, we testified when the regulation came forward to allow, any organization that any company that is crushing soybeans, to take immediate advantage of the legislation that was passed to get rid of indirect land use, as opposed to waiting until their fiscal year had turned over. And that's tens of millions of dollars that change that Treasury made, that's tens of millions of dollars that's going to get back into the hands of farmers because we're able to get about 30 cents a gallon more to soybean growers. So we're really, really proud of that work. And, you know, honestly, anything that you can do to grow a market, whether it's biofuels, whether it's trade, whether it's finding more uses for, you know, the whole milk in schools or Buy American Cotton Act or any of those things, that is how we're going to structurally change American agriculture in a way that means that we're not looking for direct payments every year.
The Trump administration had said no to USMCA in its current form, saying that there should be reform and there should be some change, and even more sparks flying now between President Trump and Mr. Carney, candidate to the north. What are the cooperative's thoughts about USMCA, and if there are going to be changes, what would you like to see?
You know, I mean, we supported 16-year renewal. That being said, we fully anticipated and understand why the administration is wanting to go to direct negotiations and say, look, if you just do a full renewal, then you're saying everything is working the way it should. I don't think anybody in the dairy industry feels like we were getting what we thought we were getting with Canada and when the original USMCA passed. And it's not just the U.S. As Deputy Secretary Vaden told our group, the entire European Union doesn't like the Canadian milk program. Australia, New Zealand, who, you know, don't like the Canadian milk program. This is not just the U.S. and Canada. This is the world and Canada that their milk program is not allow for a competitive market. And so, you know, it needs to be resolved. I think the president certainly has drawn much more attention to that issue with the proposed tariffs here this last week. But that's important. We're really heartened to see that, you know, the U.S. and Mexico is in its third round of negotiations to finish up to get to a place where you can go ahead for a renewal and make some amendments. We want to see that the supply chains there are protected, that you don't see competition from other countries coming into the U.S. through Mexico and avoiding tariffs, and our members here that are having to pay tariffs on things like aluminum, steel and aluminum cans. Like we want to see some of that shored up. So we're certainly glad to see the administration addressing those things as well. But this is an issue where the vast majority of agriculture is pretty happy with where USMCA stood, and there are a few tweaks that need to be made, but they need to be made. And so we're encouraged to see it in Mexico, and we're really hopeful to see Canada come to the table here in the near future, and we certainly encourage them to do so.
So now let's bring the big gorilla into the room. Agriculture has been waiting for help on ag labor for a long, long time. Where does the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives stand with the proposed legislation in the House? And is it finally time to see Congress make some decisions here?
Well, you know, Congress hasn't addressed labor for 40 years. And, you know, we change the farm bill every 5 years, or we try to. You know, the system was built 40 years ago for an agriculture marketplace that existed 40 years ago, and the world has changed. It's long past time for us to solve this problem. We've had 200,000 farms over the last few years go out of business. You know, we've seen entire crops where we no longer are importing or being able to grow our own crops because we don't have the labor for them. Blueberries in Maine is a great example. The production in Maine has dropped substantially because they couldn't get labor, and then they couldn't get the machinery they needed. And so we're importing those blueberries. I mean, this is something that we see all across the U.S., across whether you're talking dairy at cattle, or you're talking at, you know, specialty crops and harvesting those. Labor is a significant issue. We are a strong supporter of the bill that Chairman Thompson introduced. And candidly, we're a strong supporter of the reforms that President Trump and the Department of Labor had pushed through on the H-2A rules. And the vast majority of this bill is endorsing and codifying what President Trump has already done.
What was your response from legislators when you say this is a priority? Do you sense that you are finding votes and support for this legislation, or at least some sort of a legislative solution?
Yeah, so the most important thing this week for us was to, first of all, thank all the co-sponsors. There's over 50 bipartisan co-sponsors to the bill, and encourage them to keep fighting for this. And while we were here, the bill came under some fire from some activist groups. And so it was a good time for us to be in town to answer some of those questions. The reality is I think that most members of Congress understand it's a problem. And for years, they've told us we know this is a problem that we will fix as soon as you secure the border. And President Trump has, you know, done a remarkable job of securing the border. They all recognize that. And so, you know, this is something where the time has come. And we've got a lot of positive momentum going forward with this bill. It is not going to be easy. This is something that, you know, every time you touch this issue, it is one that is very easy to demagogue. It is very easy for people on social media to say things that aren't true. And look, you know, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth gets its work boots on. And so we're up there on the Hill trying to make sure that people have facts and understand what this bill really does and what it doesn't do. And that was what was most important for us.
So there is a bill for the House, but is there companion legislation in the Senate? And will the Senate be more difficult than the House?
First of all, there isn't yet companion legislation in the Senate. You know, that I think they're going to give the House a little bit of time to see where it goes. The Senate is always difficult to get legislation passed, but we've gotten legislation through the Senate in the past. Will it look exactly like GT's bill when it comes through the Senate? Probably not. I mean, nothing ever comes through unscathed as it goes to House and Senate. I anticipate, though, that we will have legislation in the Senate. I anticipate that there will be an opportunity for us to move something here. You know, what that looks like yet, it's a little too soon to say. But certainly all of the action right now is in the House.
Is this a piece of legislation that sees action in this calendar year, or is this reserved for a new Congress?
I am quite hopeful that we will see movement on the bill yet this year. Who knows if there'll be an opportunity to get to the president's desk. There may be a window to do that before the year ends. But I am quite hopeful that we are going to see some movement on the bill And, you know, two things can be true at once. This is the best opportunity we have had in well over a decade to pass meaningful reform for ag labor. It's the first time that we've had the entire ag community supporting the same bill, over 400 organizations. And it's going to be a very heavy lift to get it done. So it's our best opportunity, but that doesn't make it easy.
It's well documented the challenges that farmers are facing, and especially row crop producers. What's the health and what is the attitude of cooperatives across the nation?
You know, cooperatives, obviously, their health is based on what the overall ag economy is. Some of our members are doing reasonably well, depending on how the markets are and what the specific piece they're in. So it's hard to say, you know, one versus the other. That being said, you know, the value of a farmer-owned cooperative is it allows a little more sturdiness to that farmer balance sheet. So the farmer may not be making as much money on the corn that they're growing, but they're able to make a little more money when it's marketed downstream or when it's turned into ethanol, or, you know, maybe a little more money off of the farm supply side of that equation, or get a better deal through their co-op. Same is true with any commodity. So, you know, the ability to get more than the 11.8 cents of the dollar, the food dollar that farmers get directly, to be able to move up and down the supply chain, that's where farmer cooperatives come in, is that their ability to make any type of profit, even in a tough economic environment, is what is keeping a lot of these farmers afloat.
Dwayne, one of the last items I'd like to touch is the Environmental Protection Agency. The Supreme Court of the U.S. ruled that the EPA and FIFRA does have the final word on what should be on a product label. How important was that for the ag industry, and does that touch farmer cooperatives?
Yeah, you know, this is a fundamentally important landmark piece of you know, ruling from the Supreme Court. The reality of the matter is that had they not won that case, you would have seen a lot of the crop protection industry walk away from new innovation. You just can't afford to put products on the market if the EPA's labels that you're required to use are not enough to satisfy a state court, and that you could be on the hook for billions of dollars of litigation. So, you know, what has happened to Bayer over the years is fundamentally unfair in the U.S. system of justice. And so, you know, we're really pleased to see this. More importantly, farmers, cooperatives, retailers, they know what products they have available now. They know that there's going to be continued investment into products coming into the U.S., that we're not going to fall behind the rest of the world because of our litigation system, and that the EPA's regulatory gold standard that exists is going to be the gold standard, and you're not going to have to see, have to be ruled by whatever state court decision happens to happen anywhere across the country.
In the same vein, what are your thoughts on the EPA advancing some crop protection products that might be better for sustainability and better for productivity than are currently available to producers?
Oh, you know, Jeff, this is important. EPA has, when they came into office, they had a backlog of about 14,000 registrations sitting over there. They cut that about in half. At the same time, they had taken a longer look at a number of products. It really almost stopped at registrations for a short amount of time as they looked at their programs to make sure that they were looking at everything the right way, that the scientists were making the decisions, that everything was working properly. And then they started moving those forward. It's vitally important, not only for new products, but new uses of older products. And even the Me Too registrations that allow generics to lower the price on products that have come off patent. All of those things working together lower the cost of production for farmers. It lowers input prices, and it also gets new products on the market. So maybe you're using less product, you have a more sustainable product. It's all terribly important for the industry, and from a retail perspective, getting those products approved so that we can move, so that we can get them approved at this time, so that we know what's going to be produced and what we can sell this fall for the coming spring is terribly important. So having the timing on this, that's the type of regulatory efficiency that we absolutely need, and we appreciate the administration doing it.
Well, Duane, we appreciate you very much taking time on the heels of your fly-in in D.C. to talk with us here on AgriPulse Open Mic. It's a busy time for all of agriculture, and certainly plenty of hopes on what might come from Capitol Hill. Thanks for being here, and you know that being a guest on Open Mic means that you get the last word in the day.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I would just tell everybody out there listening to do what we did this week. Come to Washington, talk to your members of Congress. When they're home in August, go talk to your members of Congress. Tell them how important a farm bill is. Tell them how important it is to have trade markets. Tell them how important it is to get ag labor reform, because your voice is more powerful than any lobbyist in this town. So those of you back home, when you see your member of Congress, if you have a chance to come to Washington, absolutely jump into the fray, because this is the opportunity to get some things done.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Duane Simpson, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by AgriPulse. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Dowling.